your territory. I'll do what I'm going to do on my side. You do what you're going to do on your side, to kind of be softened. And by thinking from an ecosystem perspective, you can identify areas of cooperation and mutual benefit that don't necessarily exist when you're thinking on a sovereign perspective.
Right. We're sort of running out of time, but sure. I wanted to thank you, Todd, for being on the phone and talking to us from Washington. I've been speaking with Todd Walters. He's the founder and executive director of International Peace Park Expeditions and also the first fellow at the Policy Center for Environment and Peace at Conservation International. And Todd, just thanks for, and I'm going to be speaking with one of your colleagues now at Conservation International just up here. But thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you very much, Stephanie. I enjoyed the opportunity. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that your listeners might be interested in learning more about nature's role and the aspects with maintaining human well-being by checking out the Nature is Speaking film series, which they can find on natureisspeaking.org. And it's a phenomenal series of short films that Conservation International has put together that highlights the value of the oceans and the rainforests and the deserts and the ecosystems that are on our planet and why they matter to humanity. So thank you for the opportunity for being able to speak with your listeners, and I look forward to listening to the rest of your program.
Okay, thank you so much. And again, that was natureisspeaking.org?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, great. Hope people can tune into that.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you. We're still here, continuing with the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and the show is focused on healing our world. And my second guest here from Conservation International is Jorge Ahumada. That's correct? And Jorge, are you on the phone there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Stephanie.
Excellent. Okay, and where are you speaking to us from?
I'm actually in Arlington, Virginia at Conservation International's headquarters.
Okay. And you're the executive director there of what they call the TEAM Network, which is the Tropical Ecology Assessment and Monitoring Network, right? Which is a big mouthful.
I know, yeah, but that's right, yes.
That's what you do. And you, I guess you're originally from Colombia?
I am.
And you got your biology degree there, and then you ended up at Princeton, where you got your PhD in ecology and evolutionary biology. And I read that you're just basically broadly interested in applying mathematical models to solve applied conservation problems. And you've done a lot of work on the impacts of climate change on disease and biodiversity. But you also like the outdoors, cooking, savoring good wine, and you frequently salsa dance, right?
Yes.
Okay. I got you down. Okay. So anyway, let's just start with what exactly to talk about the rainforest, because that seems to be your expertise. And you're basically saying that they play a huge role in human survival. I mean, they're really far away, but we can't ignore them, right?
That's right. I mean, rainforest, they only cover about 6% of the land area, but they provide a lot of services to the world. Including water. A lot of the water that we drink and is regulated through the planet is through rainforests. Oxygen, which I think it's important for people, and food. And they also play vital roles in regulating the climate, for example, because rainforests store carbon and regulate a lot of the rainfall cycles, that have impacts in climate worldwide.
And so the protection of the rainforest is just super, super important to adapting to climate change, basically?
Yeah, that's correct, because rainforests store a lot of carbon through the trees, and they also regulate a lot of the patterns in climate throughout the planet. So if we didn't have rainforests, we will have huge disruptions in the water cycle and rainfall and in other in temperature and other kind of important climatic variables.
And this is rainfall that even hits us here. I'm calling you from Oregon, or you're talking to me, that the rainfall that hits Oregon is somehow interconnected with the rainforests in South America?
Yes, it is, because a lot of the patterns of rain generation come from the tropical bands of the Earth, and then those influence the climate, in both hemispheres. So, I mean, a lot of the water that comes from clouds actually comes from tropical forests.
Wow. So the tropical forests are like creating clouds that then move over the whole planet and provide rain for all of us, is what you're saying.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there is water that, is generated locally, in both hemispheres, but it's more the kind of the patterns of water, of rainfall generation that create different important pressure patterns for the rest of the world.
Uh-huh.
So, it's more complicated than I'm saying, but...
Yeah, but, I can imagine.
I mean, more importantly, rainforests provide water to millions of people that live, around, in and around these areas. For example, the Amazon River produces about 2 liters of water, so that's about a gallon of water for every person in the planet every second.
Wow.
That's how much water goes through the Amazon. And that's just one rainforest in South America.
Right. So, yeah, it's hugely important for, as you say, millions and millions of people. And actually, I just read it in terms of the carbon thing that rainforest fragmentation has been boosting the greenhouse effect. I just saw on the news it added 200 million tons of carbon yearly, just fragmentation of rainforests. So, and that's, I guess, like around the edges of the rainforest where it's getting more and more fragmented.
That's right. I mean, the emissions of carbon by deforestation are more than, the emissions we have on, all modes of transportation combined. So that's cars, planes, motorbikes, all kinds of engines that produce carbon. So deforestation, halting deforestation is crucial to curbing climate change because it generates a huge amount of carbon just by cutting down forests.
And so what is your organization actually doing in terms of rainforest protection? What is it that the Tropical Ecology Assessment and Monitoring Network does?
So TEAM is a network. It's a global network that monitors tropical forests because despite their importance and what we've been talking about, there's very little known about how rainforests work internally and the effects of climate change and deforestation on rainforests per se. So because these are remote places, normally in countries where there's not a lot of infrastructure and difficult to reach, so there's very little data. So we, a team, try to fill this gap by monitoring rainforests and putting together a program that standardizes different measurements across many, many different rainforests throughout the world. So right now we have 17 places where we work, usually protected areas, and we implement a series of methods in each of these places where we can understand what is happening to trees, what is happening to the animals that live there, and how is the climate and affecting all these things, and how these protected areas are changing, how the landscapes around them are changing in terms of, how much how much forest is being cut down and how much agriculture is being created there, and et cetera.
And so you said you're all over the world. What are some of these places where you are operating?
We are in 17 places around the world, including, you know, places in Panama, Costa Rica, Suriname, Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, Cameroon, Tanzania, Congo, Madagascar, Rwanda, Uganda, Laos, Indonesia, and I'm missing one, Malaysia.
Malaysia, yeah. So you really, really are all over the world. And
that's
what
right.
kinds of things are you finding? I mean, like in terms of the trees, the animals, the climate, and the ecology, I mean, are the specific things that you've learned that people didn't know before?
Yes, we are starting to find some very interesting things, and mostly through our Camatrap work, we're finding that we can use the Camatrap data to understand the patterns of change of many species that were previously unknown in terms of what's happening to them through time.
In other words, you take photos of them with cameras?
So yeah, we take photos of them, and then we use those photos. We apply complex models, statistical models, to understand through these images that we get to infer basically the population dynamics of these species. So whether they're decreasing, increasing, or they're stable.
We
are working on a science paper for this. But what we're finding is that we're finding more species declining than we initially thought. And a lot of this has to do with effects of climate, and also the effects of the landscape around these protected areas. So those things, we will have more news later in the year about this. But these are some of the interesting patterns that we're seeing now.
Wow. So I mean, like we're already, like someone said, in the sixth great extinction, and you're saying that that's happening even faster than we even thought it was already happening.
Yes, and the thing with tropical forests is that, you know, this is basically new information, because even though we know those species are there, we didn't know how they were doing in different places. So it's a look into a completely unknown world of the animals that live in the rainforest.
And this work that you're doing, it's different than traditional ecology in some way? I mean, just because it's just so widespread what you're looking at?
Yeah, well, it is ecology, but it is more, ecology traditionally has been more circumscribed to small number of places or years of study or a system. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to come up with a global framework to understand what is happening in tropical forests. So it's much larger in scope, and there's a lot of different questions that we can answer with this kind of network, because basically we're replicating the same methods in all these places. So we happening in this other place, people didn't use the same methods,
mm-hmm.
that can be a problem.
Right. So this is incredibly just organized, is how it sounds, you know, and it sounds like you're getting a lot of information, but who's actually using the information that you're getting?
That's a great question. And, you know, initially when TEAM was set up, we were initially focused on setting up the network from the kind of the technical point of view, and providing the data for free. And we consider ourselves a data provider, a public data provider of tropical rainforest data. But we have found recently that we can be much more effective in conservation if we create from this data. We can create products that are that can be used by governments and by national park authorities in order to manage better these rainforests. So we have created in partnership with Hewlett Packard, a very important partner of us, a technological partner. We have created a system to calculate what we call the Wildlife Picture Index, which is basically think about as a stock index but for tropical forest animals. And so through the Wildlife Picture Index, we can very quickly tell a park manager, you know, this is what's happening in your site, with, and these are the species that are declining, and this is the things that you can probably do to try to reverse those declines.
Uh-huh.
So it's very important for them because they don't really have access to a lot of information, and by being in the team network and using the Wildlife Picture Index, they can very, very quickly, you know, put together management plans for the protected areas, in particular for these species that are difficult to study, hard to study, and very important.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds, I mean, if they actually bring this stuff into play, it could be great. I just want to take a pause here to let people know you're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter with the Recovery Zone. And I'm speaking with some people from Conservation International. First, I spoke with Todd Walters, who's into Peace Parks. And now I'm with Jorge Ahumada. He's executive director of the Team Network at Conservation International, and doing a lot in terms of working toward how can we protect rainforests, which are critical to all of us. And so what would you say the status is? First, I just want to get back to that. So you're saying that the people take this information and they use it. But do you have some examples of how that's actually worked out, like where people have actually taken some of your information and changed some of their park policies or government policies?
Yes. For example, you know, in one of our sites in Costa Rica, we detected the declines of three species that are usually hunted in these sites. And the park managers there didn't know what the status of these species that were. They're the paca and the armadillo and another species, the agouti, which are small mammals, you know, like rodent-like, like rat-like, but bigger.
Uh-huh.
And these are usually hunted by local people.
Uh-huh.
So what we found is that these species were indeed declining. And when you compare the Wildlife Picture Index of these species with the Wildlife Picture Index of species that are not hunted, you know, you can see the decline in the hunted species, but not in the not hunted species. So we went with this information to the park managers at Braulio Carrillo National Park and La Selva protected areas in Costa Rica, and they actually started implementing new policies for their patrolling to try to diminish hunting activity.
Uh-huh.
And so this is like an example of how the information that we collect can be used immediately to try to find the problem, A, find the problem, and B, attempt to solve the problem.
Wow. It seems like what you're doing should be happening through the UN or something, like all over the planet, hugely. I mean, do you feel like your program is expanding and getting more and more information out there?
Yes, we are, and you're right. I mean, this is something that should be done through governments, because
right.
You know, governments, basically a lot of governments around the world have signed on to the Convention on Biological Diversity to reduce the loss of biodiversity by 2020, and they don't have a lot of many countries don't have a lot of systems like this set up in place. So we're trying to work with some of these governments to convince them that, you know, A, this is a very cost-effective way of monitoring, and B, you know, we already invested a lot of time and money in developing kind of an end-to-end system to monitor these mammals and these animals. So it's a kind of a win-win situation, and it's just a matter of time until people start, governments and other entities start adopting them.
Well, and then there was this at the last climate talks in Copenhagen, they had the New York Declaration on Forests. Do you think that kind of thing would be? And I guess what they want to do, it's like they want to have the forest loss and eliminate deforestation by big commercial supply chains, and basically end all deforestation by 2030. So do you think that what you're doing would also be a part of the New York Declaration on Forests?
Yes, because, you know, basically we do want to halt deforestation, of course, but we can't stop at that. We have to understand whether, you know, the forests that we're conserving are healthy forests or not. And this is where TEAM is an important program in trying to understand whether these forests have animals and what are their animals doing. Because there's a lot of, I don't know if you're familiar with the empty forest syndrome. There's a lot of protected areas around the world where, you know, you have forests,
uh-huh.
but basically all the animals have been hunted out.
Oh, wow.
So these forests are not healthy. And so this is an important component. We're looking at the forest from the inside and not just from the outside. And so it's an important complement to actually all the other efforts going on around the world trying to stop deforestation.
Right. It's not just about saving acres of trees. It's about saving the entire ecosystem.
Exactly. And all the services that these ecosystems provide for people. Because, you know, you can have, if you have an empty forest, you might not have the same kind of trees because if the animals are not there, you know, different trees might come in and then, you know, they might not store the same amount of carbon. They might not have the same kind of water retention capacity. And this influences ultimately people.
Right.
So, and not only the people that live there, but all of us.
Right. Everywhere. And so what is the status then of the tropical forest? Like, what would you say, like, right now? I mean, is this actually a global crisis right now, or is it still kind of tottering along?
We are losing a football field of tropical forest every second. And so, and it is, it's not equal across the globe. It's more concentrated in Southeast Asia. But we are losing a lot of tropical forest. So we have to do something quickly. And more importantly, we have to understand what is this doing? What are our actions doing in terms of climate change and other activities we do around forests? How do they impact the health of these forests?
Right. So climate change is actually degrading the forests, as well as like the degraded forests are adding to more climate change. It's like a spin loop there, right?
It is. It is because, you know, when the temperature increases, a lot of trees, you know, produce more carbon because they're under stress. And so that creates more climate change that kills more trees.
Right.
But all this is, we still don't understand very well how this feedback between forests and climate operates. There's also, you know, climate change is not only about increasing temperatures, but also about more frequent droughts or more frequent extreme events in general. So what these effects on forests and ultimately on health of societies, we just don't really know. So by only carefully understanding how these forests operate, we can start to get a clearer picture on this.
Right. And like you're saying, it's the fragmentation of it is part of all that. But there is, I think, also the New York Declaration on Forests. It says it wants to reforest an area the size of India or something like that by 2030. And is it possible to reforest a forest? I mean, is it like just to put it all back together again?
It is possible, but it takes time. And it takes commitment. And, you know, tropical forest soils are very, very thin. So once you have cut down a tropical forest, it's difficult to regenerate. But there's some things that you can do to help along. There's some species that you can plant. And then you have to wait for the natural succession to take over. But this is an active area of research. And some forests are easier to regenerate than other forests. You know, for example, cloud forests are, you know, usually more disturbed, naturally speaking, because they're in mountains. And so they tend to be, and they have, you know, thicker soils. So they tend to be easier to recover from some of the disturbances, while some of the lowland forests are a little bit harder. But it is something that it's important to do. And I think it's something that is going to contribute a lot to get us back to the level where we want to be in terms of extent of tropical forests.
So basically working on reforestation as opposed to deforestation. And would you be involved in that too, like monitoring how these new forests would be, you know, just how they're developing, how they're prospering or the health of them or whatever with TEAM?
Yeah, we certainly would like to do that in places where that is happening. And right now we are mostly working in protected areas, but in some of those protected areas around them, there are efforts to reforest. We just haven't had the resources to actually go in there. But it's something that we're looking into the future, that we want to serve as kind of an early warning system, but also as a way to check that everything is developing the way it should be.
Sort of like the doctor monitoring the patient.
Exactly. That's what we're doing. You know, we're looking at the symptoms of health of a forest. You know, it's exactly that. And without knowing without having measurements of your heart rate or of your blood pressure or your blood sugar, it's very difficult for a doctor to say what's wrong with you. So that's what we're doing. Basically, taking the signs of, you know, the vital signs of the forest, and using those to diagnose the problems and find the solutions.
Right, and to just monitor the health and stuff like that. And what is Conservation International then doing to protect our rainforest? Are they doing more than just what you're doing, or could you talk about that?
Yes, I mean, we're working all around the world in many, many countries trying to protect these sources of natural capital. You know, we call natural capital as opposed to, you know, regular capital, because they are capital in the sense that they provide services for people. And so our work concentrates on securing these places for that are the source of natural capital, that so that they can feed into the economies of countries at several different levels and make, you know, sustainable development possible. And so we work with governments, local partners, academic partners, all kinds of stakeholders that are involved in the conservation and development, to try to find sustainable solutions for conservation, and to kind of change the conversation about development and make it more about we can develop with nature instead of developing, you know, at the expense of nature.
Yeah, and just real quick, a couple of examples of how that would work.
Yeah, for example, we're working in Peru, in the Alto Mayo region, where there's a huge forest reservoir, and we've been working with people living around those places so that they can get payments from the ecosystem services that they provide from that forest. And so that generates kind of a different conversation about, you know, how we live off natural capital and what the benefits of natural capital are, not only for the people that live there, but for the entire country. And we have also similar projects going on in Indonesia and in the Mekong area I forgot the name now.
It's okay.
Anyway, yeah.
All over, basically.
Yes, all over.
Yeah, and
in Cambodia,
Cambodia, beautiful. And so the products that they get out aren't just wood, you know, Brazilian hardwood or whatever. It's like things that are can be regenerated by the forest.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're doing a lot, and then as the last speaker, Todd Walters, said. Conservation International is doing Songs of the Earth. What was that about? They're doing a film series, right? And people could learn more about what's going on through looking at that by going to Conservation International.
Yeah, so it's nature is speaking.org.
Nature is speaking, right, yeah.
/rainforest. And you will see a lot of films there about nature telling us, you know, what they think. And it's a very interesting campaign because it really changes the way we perceive nature and focuses more on what it's important for us.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So I invite everyone to go there, naturespeaking.org.
And the headline was, Nature, we need nature. Nature doesn't need us.
Exactly. Right. I didn't want to give it away, but you just did, so.
Sorry. Yeah. But anyway, it's been great talking to you. I've been speaking with Jorge Ahumada. He's executive director of TEAM, which is the Tropical Ecology Assessment and Monitoring Network at Conservation International. You can find out more by going to their website. and conservation.org or natureisspeaking.org. And I just want to thank you, Harge, for being on this show, and wish you much luck with all you're doing.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. And I've been speaking with two members of Conservation International. I'm Stephanie Potter with the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. Want to thank all of you for listening to the show, and we'll sign off now.
And that's all for morning programs here at KBOO for Wednesday. It's the 22nd of October. But stay right here because Jazz Lives is up next, following the KBOO Noon News. This is KBOO Portland. Thanks for tuning in today.
This is KBOO Headline News at noon for Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, a public partnership of business people, politicians, and corrections officials will meet privately this Friday to discuss ways to put ex-convicts to work. The group will review current trends in the post-prison workforce and hear testimonials from people with criminal histories who have done well since returning from incarceration. Dave's Killer Bread is hosting this Second Chance Summit.
When the weather turns nasty this winter in Portland, homeless individuals and families with children will have somewhere to retreat for shelter. The Forest Grove Severe Weather Shelter, run by the Forest Grove Church of Christ, will provide meals and a warm environment for those who are in peril because of the extremely bad weather. In southeast Portland, the American Red Cross will again open warming shelters on those nights when temperatures drop below freezing.
Hundreds of tons of debris is scheduled to be removed from a waterway south of Coos Bay. The area is home to the federally